building all your hopes and dreams.
Talk about
possibilities.
It ain't rocket surgery,
but maybe it is.
Come on down, we're gonna sit around and
get into your business. Get into your business.
Welcome to the Small Business Miracles Podcast. I'm Jeff Randolph. This Small Business Podcast is brought to you by EAG Advertising and Marketing. We're going to talk about marketing, and we're also here to celebrate entrepreneurs. We have marketing news and advice that business owners can use to keep moving forward. This week, we're talking about HR with Paul Sackett. He's the owner and founder of Your HR. But first, we've got another small business marketing tip to talk about.
Business.
A quick word today in our tip section about the search habits of people coming to your website. Do you know what terms brought them to your site? Well, frequently, when we meet with a new business prospect, we have a quick conversation about whether the searches that bring people to the website are from branded searches or unbranded searches. And we'll do that research and we'll find out, and then we'll talk to somebody. Okay, so let's define branded and unbranded. A branded search is a search someone is doing on Google that includes your brand name in the search. They know who you are and they're searching for you specifically by brand name. That is a branded search. An unbranded search is someone finding you in a search for the thing that you do, a service you provide or a product that you sell, and not for your brand name. That's an unbranded search. Do these people know your brand name before they click on you? Maybe, or maybe not. Now, what should your search traffic look like? Well, that depends on a lot of factors. From the business owner standpoint, I can tell you it's a lot easier to get that sale if they already know your brand name. And in a crowded, competitive field, the click will usually go to the brand they've heard of before. When you're presented with a list of search people, I'm going to choose the one I've actually heard of before. That is the benefit of brand awareness. But brand advertising can be expensive, and generating that kind of brand recognition means consistently marketing to your target audience over time. Now, what is the right mix of branded and unbranded traffic to your company website? We'd need to talk about your unique circumstances because your results may vary based on no end of factors. But, you know, we could talk.
Business.
Welcome back to the show. I am here with Paul Sackett. He is the founder and president of Your HR. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jeff. Good to be here.
We're happy to have you. We're happy to have this kind of conversation. HR is kind of important to everything that we do. Give us an overview of the business. What is Your HR? And let's talk about, you know, kind of the clients that you have and that you work with. And
sure.
That sort of thing.
Sure. So Your HR is a fractional HR services company. Mm-hmm. And the question I always get is, so what is fractional HR? And basically what I do is I provide clients executive level HR strategic support at a fraction of a full-time C-suite level salary. So that's kind of where the word fractional comes
gotcha,
in.
Right.
It's a nice way of saying part-time.
Part-time. and you've, like, this is... Not just anyone can do that. You need someone you can trust and someone who has the background to do it. You
right.
have a tremendous history in your career of working mm-hmm. with some Fortune 50 companies and doing exactly this kind of thing. And now you're saying, you know, I have all this expertise. Let's
yeah.
break this up.
So, you know, you're right. And I worked in corporate HR for over 30 years mm-hmm. and backed into HR, started as a recruiter
right.
For a company here in the Midwest. Had no idea that, you know, I was going to have this 30-year career path of human resources. And once I got into the recruiting, it evolved into helping a lot of business managers with employee relations issues and challenges and talent management and all of those kind of things mm-hmm. and coaching. And that was something that I really liked. I enjoyed doing that. And I enjoyed helping both employees and managers, being a facilitator. And it just evolved. And then I was an HR manager, spent some time with General Electric, worked out east. That was kind of where I really learned the nuances of succession planning and talent management and the importance of culture and engagement. And so about a year and a half ago, I was at a point in my career where I could make some life choices for myself, and decided, you know, I want to do this. The seed was planted, I think it was in 2019 when I was first introduced to what a fractional leader is. And there's fractional leaders in all the disciplines.
Oh, yeah. No, fractional CMO, chief marketing officer. We will do the same thing for you if you like.
Yeah. Fractional finance, sales, and HR. And so anyway, I started the company about a year and a half ago. I'd had a lot of entrepreneurial friends here in Kansas City that would ask me questions, and I'd give them advice for free.
Right.
And I realized there was a need.
Wait a minute.
I realized that there was a need that small businesses, entrepreneurs, owners really needed that strategic HR advice. Right. They might have somebody doing the operational things, like their payroll and onboarding and recruiting, but they lack that, you know, how do I, you know, build the right kind of culture? How do I help talent development? How do I, you know, grow my people? And all of those kind of strategic HR conversations. So that's what I do.
Is there a particular like size of client that you work with? Is there a sweet spot? Who is right for you? Who's not right for
you? And I get that question a lot too. And it's really not about revenue. It's more about number of headcount. And so generally someone that would look for my services would be 150 employees and down. The sweet spot's probably right between 50 and 100. A lot of things change for employers after they go past 50 employees because of a lot of the federal regulations and so on and so forth. And so things can get a little bit more complicated with regards to compliance after 50 employees. So definitely 50 between 50 and 100 employees would be probably a sweet spot.
Perfect. Yeah, well, and that is good definition. Tell us the difference between like if they say, you know, hey, we're hiring for HR, and what you really do on a day-to-day basis. What are the kind of services that you're bringing to the table?
So one of the things that I help some of my clients with is they may already have somebody internal doing their transactional, what I call operational HR work, okay? So they may already even have a handbook. They may already have those kind of things that a operational, transactional HR department would do. What I do is really work as their business partner.
Okay.
So in HR, my 30 years, you know, there's two parts of HR. There's what we would call HR operations. Those are the folks that manage the, you know, the day-to-day benefits and payroll and filing and compliance and maybe the recruiting, hiring, onboarding. That's kind of HR operations. The other side is the HR business partner. And that's the role that I primarily worked in my career, where I would be partnered up with a division head or a site leader or someone like that. And I would be their go-to person for all people questions, even some business questions that related to people, headcount, workforce planning, all of those kind of things. So what I do is really more on the strategic side of helping my clients navigate kind of the waters, and then also provide them that experience of helping that internal HR manage the compliance things, help them be more effective and efficient, and really act as a mentor and a guide to maybe any internal resources they're already using to do their HR stuff.
Gotcha. And those internal resources and even you coming in as the fractional HR leader, we have a lot of different HR issues we're thinking about. And I want to make sure that we get some of the things in your head out. All the buzzwords that we're hearing now, all the issues that we see, and I'll throw a few out to kind of get that conversation going. There are four generations in the workforce. That's a big deal for communication. A bunch of other buzzwords like the Great Resignation or quiet quitting or remote work. What are the biggest issues that you tend to work on a weekly basis with a client?
So I think probably the biggest one is really culture and a lot about environment. And there's a lot of elements that come into that, like development. You know, again, you mentioned the four generations in the workplace. That's probably one of the biggest challenges that I see a lot of small business owners or managers or even executives in large companies deal with. Because most of us, and I'm date myself, most of us are, you know, in our 50s now, mid to late 50s or early 60s. We're right on the edge of being baby boomers, and there's still baby boomers in the workplace. And we struggle with understanding what's important to maybe the younger generations.
Yes.
and it's very distinct. There wasn't as much difference between the Gen X and the baby boomers.
Right, right. We were a little closer together.
You know.
I'm going to out myself as an Xer real quickly here. I'm taking sides.
I am taking sides. So the challenge is really then to be able to open your mind up to being able to create that environment and culture that's important to the other generations. So one of the things that I tell this story, you know, I was very, very traditional when it came to having people in the office. Mm-hmm. And felt like, you know, you had to have that face-to-face interaction to build that camaraderie and that team. And how could you have a culture when you don't have your people working, you know, together? And the pandemic started to change my attitude about that. I actually started a little bit before the pandemic when we were having so much trouble finding talent.
Right, right.
And, you know, the other thing that changed is people don't want to pick up and relocate for a job. Mm-hmm. Like when I was, you know, starting my career, I moved a half a dozen times all over the country to take, you know, opportunities. People don't want to do that anymore.
Right, right.
So for us to be able to get the kind of talent that we need to be successful, to create the kind of culture and environment, you have to be adaptable in how you think and manage a workforce today. And yeah. So you got to be flexible.
And how you manage culture across that kind of remote
Correct.
Environment is a different kind of animal than if you're managing culture internally in one building.
Correct. And there's things that I, you know, also when I'm, you know, counseling or coaching a millennial, say, you know, it's also, there's things that you can learn from the boomers.
Sure.
Right. There are some things that you can learn from the boomers. And so to try to create that environment of collaboration.
Right.
Between the generations.
Yes, and likewise across all of the demographic age groups. There are things you can learn from each of them. And, you know, getting someone in an older demographic to understand that you can learn something from a younger demographic is just as difficult sometimes. So, yeah, more communication is a great way to go. Get culture where it needs to be.
Yeah.
I want to talk about a your HR difference here. You don't have to read long on your website to see that there is a focal difference that, and I'll quote from your site if you'll allow it. When your employees are engaged and feel appreciated and taken care of at work, you'll create an unstoppable company culture and fantastic reputation, which gains you a vital competitive advantage. Give us some of the sentiment and definition around that.
So I think that's something that I'm very passionate about, that mm-hmm. I feel very strongly about. And I'll tell you where it comes from. So growing up, I was an athlete. I played competitive sports, football, in high school and college. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I learned in my competitive sports life as a young person was a lot of times the difference between winning and losing was the culture on the team.
Oh, yeah.
And we could have a lot of talent on the team, but if there were people that were bickering or fighting or the coach wasn't leading or we weren't inspired, no matter how much talent we had, we would lose. And when, you know, the fourth quarter would roll around or the things got tough, we would lay down. Mm. And that can feed and build on teammates, right? Mm. And it only takes one rotten apple in a group of people to bring the whole team down.
Right.
And so you carry that forward into business, and it's very much the same. A group of people is a team. And, you know, if you have that vision of, hey, we're all in this for a common goal or a common objective, or we're working together, those will be successful teams. And I've seen extremely talented business people fail together, collaborative as a team, because they can't get along. They don't have the foundational element of trust and vulnerability to be that cohesive team. And so for me, to help people be successful and help my clients be successful, that's why I believe it starts with the culture. Mm-hmm. Culture drives engagement, not the other way around. You can have people that are really engaged in their daily activities, but they really don't like who they work for, or they don't understand the vision and where they're going or what they're really even doing. And so that's why I make culture something that is a cornerstone of when I'm having conversations with CEOs and things. Anything that we do, whether it's rolling out a policy, whether it is you know, some type of activity that we're going to do. You know, what is our purpose here? Mm-hmm. Because you just can't do things without understanding the impact that it's going to have on your culture.
Yeah.
So That's why that's really important. And another example that I love to use is most of us that live here in the Kansas City area are very familiar with Kansas City Chiefs.
I've heard of them, yes.
You've heard of them, right?
Yes,
I think
yes,
we won a couple Super Bowls. Anyway, I don't know how many people remember, I sure do, living through the
Marty Schottenheimer era?
The Marty Schottenheimer, but the Paoli and Todd Haley era. Mm-hmm. You remember that from like 08 to 10 in there?
Yep.
And the culture within the Kansas City Chiefs was horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
In the office environment, Scott Paoli didn't create a very good office environment in the front office. I've heard lots of people that worked for the Chiefs. A lot of people became very disengaged. A lot of people left the organization. That's behind the scenes. That's not what even the product was out on the field.
Right.
And the Chiefs were a disaster. I think the last, Todd Haley, they fired him before the season was even over. And then then all of a sudden, we bring in Andy Reid. And then Andy Reid comes in. We bring in a new GM. And the culture of the organization is completely different. Which attributes to their winning as much as what it was when they were losing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that culture, and I talk to people that I know that work in the back offices with the Chiefs, they're so engaged, they're so fired up about the organization. It's just such a different environment. So even, you know, the vendors, the folks that take care of the equipment, the marketing folks, the whole behind the office scene is completely different, which is supporting the winning culture on the field.
And you're not claiming that you wrote or produced Ted Lasso. You're just saying the message is right and that culture is really important. And if we believe, we're going to do that.
I love Ted Lasso. There's so many, you know, great HR things in Ted Lasso. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely think that for anyone that's questioning or wondering about, you know, culture or even what I'm talking about, go watch Ted Lasso.
Does this matter? Can this improve your business? Yes. Go do that. Go do that right now.
And you don't have to be, as Ted Lasso, necessarily an expert in the sport that he's building the culture around.
Yeah.
Right?
True. Oh, what a great example. I'm going to use that as a transition to get us into the lightning round. Are you ready for the lightning round?
Sure.
You have no way. Like, we knew we were going to talk about your HR. We knew we were going to talk about HR issues. We have no way to know what we're going to talk about here. I hope you're ready for this.
I'm ready. Set?
Okay, here we go. I want to talk about sous vide for a second. I'm going to ask you the things that you've made using sous vide. But before I do that, a little background for our entrepreneur friends at home. Sous vide, amazing tool in the kitchen, tremendous control. You vacuum seal your food with some spices and some healthy or unhealthy fats. You submerge that in a water bath with an immersion circulator that has very precise heat control. So you're setting time and temperature. It will never overcook. You're taking, you know, turkey that you cook, and you cook that to 165 degrees internal temperature. But you do that for like 30 seconds, and you've killed all the bad bacteria. But if you cook a turkey at, say, 3 hours for 138 degrees, you'll get a better result. It'll be a better turkey. Plus, it kills all the bacteria to a log 7 standard. So what are you cooking in a sous vide machine? What have you done with sous vide?
So I think one thing that people, they think it's all just steaks or meat or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's amazing for carrots, mashed potatoes. Those are my two probably favorite vegetables.
Okay.
And carrots are amazing because if you steam carrots or you boil carrots,
right.
It really takes a lot of the flavor out. But mm-hmm. when you sous vide it, and then all you have to do is throw them in a skillet, glaze them up, and then they're amazing.
What do you do for potatoes? Potatoes are, how do you do that while it's a whole potato? Are you diced?
To make mashed potatoes, you dice up the mashed potatoes, put your milk, your butter, mm-hmm. and garlic.
Okay.
Minced garlic and some rosemary, and cook that in the sous vide, and then drain out, save your liquid, and then mix your liquid back in as you hand mash the potatoes. Don't use a mixer; the starch
then
makes
you get
them
glue
start.
And,
exactly.
That would be a terrible idea.
Hand mashed potatoes.
Gotcha. Okay. Any other? Have you done experiments with sous vide? Like, hey, I'm going to cook this for a day and a half.
So one of the best things that I've cooked is an eye of round roast.
Oh, that's a...
So an eye of round roast is one of the tougher pieces of meat. And actually, when you cook it in the sous vide, and it's like 30 hours, and then, you know, you sear it off, it's literally like, well, they call it a poor man's prime rib.
Mm-hmm.
It's so tender.
Because you've treated the product so well. Correct. You've cooked it for 30 hours in a sous vide machine. It's
128, 29 degrees for 30 hours.
I know we're getting into sous vide territory here, and this is very cooking show like, but like if you're doing a party for a bunch of people, you can have a million things in a water bath and hold it at a temperature of, you know, medium rare or whatever you'd like to do. And it's never going to overcook. You can be party guest, host, and have a great time. And then, is it time to pull that out of the water bath and serve? Done. Like, it's a tremendous tool. Big fan.
Here's the other nice thing about it is one of the other things is I always struggled for, you know, cooking bone-in chicken.
Yeah.
And you cook it in the sous vide, and I've made the best fried chicken I've ever made in my life because I cooked it in the sous vide, and then you've put it in a flour or whatever, and you fry up, and you don't have any worries of that bloodiness around the bone or anything. Yep. So I love it. I use it a lot to cook bone-in chicken. Chicken wings, amazing.
Outstanding. Okay, we'll move off the food topic for a minute. That's a good lightning round question. I'm happy with that. One of the top voices of people that you follow on LinkedIn is Ryan Reynolds. And I want to talk about that. Are you more of a Deadpool fan or a Wrexham fan, or are you just a gin drinker?
All of the above? No, I like Deadpool. I would have to go with Deadpool.
You know, and from a management perspective, the things they're doing on Wrexham, if you haven't watched Welcome to Wrexham,
I have.
That guy, they're doing it right.
Yeah.
Well done, Deadpool.
And I think one of the things that I like is that, you know, he can be serious and drive a point with a sense of humor.
Yes, 100%. And
very
charisma
and dry. I like the dry humor. That's why I like the Deadpool. It's so, like, dry.
Tremendous. Let me go with the next question. How do you size people up? There are no end of HR profile and job candidate assessment tools out there, Myers-Briggs and Clifton Strength Finders and DISC. Do you have a favorite of all of those? Do you use one and go, hey, I like this one, or I like that one, or this one makes sense to me?
I think as far as, you know, doing the psychological type profiles, I mean, Myers-Briggs is the foundation. Mm-hmm. It's the one that built everything else that's built off of, you know, was built off of Myers-Briggs. I think it's very in-depth. And I think it, you know, does a very good job about pointing out what of our personality traits. The challenge, though, I think with some of that is, and one of the tools that I like the best is Strength Finders. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is that, you know, we have 30 different strengths, and through all that, we have all of those mm-hmm. in our personalities. Everybody has these different characteristics within their personalities. It's just which one is your strongest one. You know, like I can do things with my left hand, but I'm naturally more comfortable with my right hand.
I lead with my right.
And so I think all of those are valuable tools. Mm-hmm. But I think with anything, people can also evolve over time. I think we have some things that are hardwired into us, and I think that's what Myers-Briggs is good at, getting the hardwired stuff. Mm-hmm. But Strength Finders is good at getting those things that we actually can evolve over time.
And focus on what
we're good at.
Let's not focus on you can't do the – you got a report card with all A's and a B. What's with that B? What's going on with that B? Like, we can focus on the good
stuff. And one of the things that I like about Strength Finders, and I go back to culture and team, right, mm-hmm. and successful teams – they're not monolithic, right? You've got to have different personalities and different people to make up successful groups of people. And one of the things that Strength Finders does is it helps people realize all the different elements of their personalities that they bring as a strength to that team.
This is the part B to this question. And the part B to the question is, when you meet someone new, do you immediately size them up using one of these? Like, oh, that guy's an ENTJ, or, you know,
I don't use like more of an assessment tool. It's just, and I don't make judgments on just first initial.
That's very kind. Meetings. That's a very kind thing to do. A good outreach.
Well, because, you know, you can be wrong.
True.
And I hate it when people have done that about me, you know, and met me and made it walked away and made an immediate assessment. I'm like, you didn't even really get to know me.
Yeah. Yep.
And we're, you know, people are complicated, and it takes time and interaction before you can really make an assessment on someone.
Oh, see, that's just a wonderful answer. That's a tremendous HR answer. If you could be any TV character throughout time, who would you be?
Oh, wow. That's a good one. There's so many. I don't know. I might have to punt on that one. I'm trying to think of some of my favorite TV shows. I think, I don't know. I'm going to throw one out there. Chandler.
A Chandler guy. All right. Okay.
You know, he was funny. He always had a great wit, sense of humor. He was successful, although we never did really know what he did.
Right.
You know, I just thought he was a great guy. And, you know, and of course, as that series wrapped up, you know, his and Monica's romance was kind of sweet.
One for the ages.
Yeah. So I kind of always liked Chandler. Got and it. I'm sorry that, you know, he's no longer with us. So yeah.
Chandler Bong for the win. All right. You started your career in advertising sales. Can you give me a lesson learned or a takeaway from that early part of your career?
Sure. So when I started, I actually started in radio.
Mm-hmm. We can tell you've got a voice for radio.
Oh, thank you. So I actually started in radio, and I started doing just odds and ends, reading news copy, whatever they found for me to do. I was an intern at the radio station, and that internship turned into a job. And for them to validate my job, they wanted me to go out and sell ads for local high school basketball games and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I think one of the things that I learned in all of that, that I carry with me to this day, is a lot of the people that I were calling on and selling ads were all small businesses and entrepreneurs and in a variety of industries, you know, from a ag supplies store to a liquor store to the, you know, big grocery stores. And so it was a wide variety of industries. And I learned how to work within that, you know, variety of businesses. And in advertising, part of my job was to help figure out ways to help them be successful and make money and, you know, get people in the door and so on and so forth. And so there was a lot of that experience. It's carried over into especially what I'm doing today in working with small businesses, helping them be successful. How do we grow? How do we, you know, maintain our employees? How do we attract employees? So,
man, the way that, those early career jobs just stack on top, it serve as the foundation.
I would have never imagined. And if I can add one more, is one of the other things is I actually, one summer, and I worked in a manufacturing plant. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was so helpful when I was a line HR manager and working in a factory and helping our operators. And,
yeah, you know where they come from. You get it.
I've done the work
here. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I'm taking you out of the lightning round. That was a great lightning round from sous vide all the way to Deadpool and everything in between. Chandler Bong, great. Well done. You've survived.
Thank
Congratulations.
You. Thank you.
Tell everybody where they can find you. Where can they learn more about you? Where do they go for information if they want to know more?
Absolutely. My website address is www.yhrexperts.com. Y as in the letter Y, hrexperts.com. You can find me on LinkedIn. My profile, Paul Sackett. Also, my business page on LinkedIn, which is Your HR. And so that's where you can find me. And we have a free HR assessment website.
I did see that actually.
That, you know, I get a lot of questions about, you know, I don't even know if I need HR. So, you know, here's a free, simple 10-question HR assessment that a business owner can take and kind of maybe evaluate where are my gaps, where are my opportunities, and give us a call. We'll give you a free assessment. And people always ask me, well, you know, what do you do? And it's like, I need to have a conversation and let's talk about what your concerns are. Mm-hmm. And we'll figure out where we go from there.
All right. Paul Sackett, founder and president of Your HR. Thanks for being with us today.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Business. And that is our show. Thanks to our guest, Paul Sackett, and thank you for listening to the Small Business Miracles podcast. Remember to subscribe, leave us a 5-star rating and review, drop us a line on the website at eagadv.com if you have any thoughts. Until then, we'll be out here helping entrepreneurs with another Small Business Miracle.
Talk about strategies. Talk about capabilities. teams, building all your hopes and dreams.
Talk about
possibilities.
It ain't rocket surgery,
but maybe it is.
Come on down, we're gonna sit around and
get into your business. Get into your business. Get into your business.
Get into your business.
Get into your business.
Get into your business.
Get into your business.
Get into your business.
Get into your business.